Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
The House of Representatives voted last week to require background checks for all gun purchases. It's the kind of common sense, broadly popular proposal that can't possibly succeed.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to U.S. Representative Jamie Raskin from Maryland. But first, a closer look.
Dozens of prominent New York Democrats, from Chuck Schumer to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, have called on Governor Andrew Cuomo to resign after a flood of sexual harassment allegations and the revelation that his administration covered up the COVID death toll in nursing homes. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has had such a precipitous fall from grace that in the span of just a few months, he's gone from winning an Emmy, writing a best-selling book, and doing prop comedy with giant medical swabs on CNN like a dental hygienist at a middle school assembly, to facing calls for his resignation from dozens of his fellow Democrats, including some of New York's most prominent lawmakers.
The majority of House Democrats from New York are calling for Cuomo's resignation, including Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Chairman of the House Committee on the Judiciary, Jerry Nadler, released a statement saying the repeated accusations against the governor and the manner in which he has responded to them have made it impossible for him to continue to govern at this point.
More than 50 state Democratic lawmakers, legislators, signed onto a letter yesterday also calling on Cuomo to resign.
It's clear that Governor Cuomo has lost the confidence of his governing partners, as well as the people of New York.
It is disgusting to me, and he can no longer serve as governor.
It's clear to me that the governor can no longer be effective.
Governor Cuomo has lost the confidence of his governing partners and of so many New Yorkers. So for the good of the state, he should resign.
First of all, you know you're in a bad spot when even Chuck Schumer calls on you to resign. That dude doesn't do anything hastily. Before he makes any decision, he has to have at least 4 brow furrows and inches glasses down to the tip of his nose. Chuck Schumer makes decisions so slowly that one time he was ordering at an Italian restaurant and the waiter stood there so long he died of exposure. Let's see. Rigatoni? No. Ziti? Too heavy. Do you have any? Ah! Second, so many Democrats have called on Cuomo to resign that at this point it's easier to ask who hasn't done so. Good news, Governor. The Oswego County Commissioner for Water and Sewer Services is standing by us. Wait, nope, sorry. He said you should resign. Somebody called the Schenectady Parks Department. They'll never turn on us. And just to give you a visual representation of the dramatic collapse of Cuomo's political standing, here he is in November accepting an Emmy for his COVID briefings, and here he is on Friday at the governor's mansion wrapped in a blanket holding a bottle of something. Nobody panic. We're going to be fine. Now get me my thinking blanket. I need to make some calls. It's never good when your governor starts dressing like Nicole Kidman's therapist from some HBO murder show. Looks like someone's deadbeat dad who hangs around beach bonfires and tries to start sing-alongs to Brown Eyed Girl. I'm not saying his administration is a shipwreck, but that's how guys dressed when they tried to sneak onto a Titanic lifeboat.
Am I a man? Oh, gracious, no. My name is Mrs. Bottle Blanket.
And yet Cuomo's so far resisted the pressure to resign, blaming it on cancel culture and insisting that he's being targeted because he's not part of the political establishment.
people know the difference between playing politics, bowing to cancel culture, and the truth. Let the review proceed. I'm not going to resign. I was not elected by the politicians. I was elected by the people. Part of this is that I am not part of the political club.
All right, first of all, can we now agree that the term cancel culture is officially meaningless? He's using the same line as the people who spent the last 3 weeks getting mad about the Muppets, Mr. Potato Head, and Looney Tunes. This is just like what happened to Dr. Seuss. The only difference is I do run the zoo. Second, how can you say you're not part of the political club? You're the son of a former governor. You were in Bill Clinton's cabinet. Your last name is on a bridge. That's like Al Unser Jr. saying he didn't come from car people. It really can't be understated just how dramatic a downfall this has been for Cuomo. It wasn't long ago, of course, that he was winning national acclaim for his performances at coronavirus briefings, where he, among other things, displayed his mastery of the calendar.
Today is Saturday. That is a fact. Today is Sunday. Today is Friday. Today is Saturday. Today is Monday. Today is Thursday. Today is Saturday.
I mean, it really gives you an idea of just how surreal and horrifying the early days of the pandemic were, that we all found it soothing to watch a guy with all the charm and charisma of an outer borough mattress salesman tell us what day of the week it was. If Andrew Cuomo's dad hadn't been governor, there's a good chance he'd be working at one of those used car dealerships in Queens that does local ads during Yankee broadcasts. Come on down to Cuomo Kia of Kew Gardens. Cuomo cars, Cuomo savings. Isn't that right? Former Yankees third baseman Scott Brosius. Today is Monday. Now that's a home run. Again, I get why we found them reassuring. I did too. It was a scary time, and there was a leadership void, and he stepped into it. There were times when I genuinely did not know what day it was. It's not like I was grabbing a newspaper on my daily commute to the attic. The same controlling authoritarian tendencies Cuomo has displayed throughout his career also made him a commanding presence when everyone was desperate for one. And as a result, he turned himself into a TV star. He won an Emmy, wrote a best-selling book, stirred speculation that he might run for president or become Joe Biden's attorney general, and earn a nickname that was super cringy at the time, and in retrospect, so much worse.
The governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, he has been front and center, right, during this pandemic, holding coronavirus briefings during the week, talking to, updating the country. Lately, he has been asked by many, including his own brother, CNN's Chris Cuomo, if he will run for president.
We are learning that Governor Cuomo may be in the running for Joe Biden's attorney general.
The Love Gov here on GMA this Monday morning.
The Love Gov?
Yeah, that's a Andrew Cuomo's nickname. Do you didn't know that?
Now, you know, I've seen you referred to a little bit recently as the Love Gov.
The New York Post dubbed you the new Love Gov.
Ugh. No politician should ever be called the Love Gov. That sounds like the name of an early 2000s bro comedy starring Owen Wilson as a college dropout who accidentally becomes governor. Oh, man, I gotta clean my room before the legislature comes over. And now all that acclaim is vaporized nearly overnight. As the real Andrew Cuomo is caught up to the character Andrew Cuomo was playing on TV, or as the New Republic put it, fans of Andrew Cuomo, the television character, are being introduced to Andrew Cuomo, the newspaper character, and the newspaper character is always so much worse than the TV character in the newspaper. Those Far Side cartoons are just a bunch of dumb cavemen, but in the TV show, they were played by Ryan Gosling and Timothy Chalamet. The point is, Cuomo's TV audience is now learning about the real Andrew Cuomo as he faces accusations of bullying, an abuse of power, creating a toxic workplace environment, a COVID cover-up, and allegations of sexual harassment from at least six women.
Over the last 2 weeks, six women, including current and former members of Cuomo's staff, have accused him of sexual harassment and unwanted advances.
The allegations against Cuomo range from allegations of inappropriate touching and inquiries about the sex lives of his subordinates to allegations of unwanted kissing and a request to play strip poker during a trip on a government plane.
Ugh, why is strip poker the spin the bottle of gross older dudes? Also, what's the appeal? Like, I don't have a good body, but the worst it's going to look is naked and hunched over a card table. Plus, it's extra bad for me because my tell when I'm bluffing is my penis gets smaller. That's what happened, everyone. I don't know what to tell you. I was bluffing. Let's let it go and deal the cards. Apparently, another one of Cuomo's tactics was to ask female aides for tech help. One former aide said Cuomo asked her to help him with his iPhone, claiming he was uncertain how to get from his Settings app to his Notes app. And then late last fall, Cuomo summoned another female staff member from the Capitol to his executive mansion. This time, the woman, who is roughly half his age, was directed to his private residence on the second floor. Again, Cuomo said he could not operate the Notes app on his iPhone and needed her assistance. Nothing says sexy like I'm too old to figure out my phone. What a horrible pickup line. That's like saying, hey, babe, got a minute? My VCR keeps blinking 12 o'clock. Also, I'm sorry, you couldn't find your notes app? It's right there. It's on the home screen. Looks like a notepad. It says notes. How many more clues do you need? How do I access it? Do I yell at it? Notes, open, begin note. Today is Monday. And in addition to the sexual harassment allegations, Cuomo's also dealing with the fallout from his administration's alleged cover-up of coronavirus deaths in nursing homes. Cuomo and his administration are facing investigations from the FBI and U.S. attorney and an impeachment inquiry from the state legislature after the state attorney general found that his administration had severely undercounted COVID deaths in nursing homes.
The New York Times reporting tonight top aides to New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo rewrote a report in summer of last year to hide the number of nursing home deaths due to the coronavirus.
In the wake of Cuomo ordering nursing homes to take in all individuals, even with COVID in March 2020, which critics say led to loss of life, some of Cuomo's top aides allegedly rewrote a June 2020 nursing home report to hide the high COVID death toll in nursing homes, cutting it by nearly half.
That's right. They just rewrote the report. They covered it up. They lied. And if they lied about the COVID death toll in nursing homes, you have to ask yourself, what else are they lying about? Wait a second. Today isn't Saturday. It's Thursday. And look, again, I get why. To anyone who watched Cuomo on TV during the pandemic, this might all be a little bit shocking, but to people who have chronicled his career in New York, it's anything but. For one thing, Cuomo has long been a nemesis of progressives in the state, often siding with Republicans and even helping them maintain control of the state Senate for years. He threatened to destroy Democratic member of the state assembly, Ron Kim, for criticizing his handling of nursing homes. And last year, at the same time that he was winning plaudits for his COVID briefings, he was also proposing massive cuts to Medicaid, which included $400 million in cuts to hospitals in the middle of a pandemic. That's like showing up to a burning building with that month's water bill. Whew! This is going to be a hefty one. Cuomo also saw an exodus of public health officials from his administration after he all but declared war on his own public health bureaucracy, according to the New York Times, seizing control of the state's vaccination program, sidelining experts, and ignoring their advice. And Cuomo even went so far as to make this stunning remark.
When I say experts, in air quotes, it sounds like I'm saying I don't really trust the experts. Because I don't. Because I don't.
That's some real sports radio call-in energy. Jets are going all the way next year. Don't trust the experts. I bet my house on it. Okay, it's in my wife's name. I live in it. I live in it. Also, really, you think you know better than the experts? Okay, mister, I can't find my notes app. Cuomo's long been known in New York as a micromanaging bully who intimidates and coerces people to get his way, which is why he has so few friends left now as he faces a stampede of intensifying scandals. And there have been in recent days a series of damning exposés about the toxic culture of intimidation and imperiousness he has fostered around him. One of those articles by New York Magazine's Rebecca Traister contains this deeply revealing anecdote about a party at the governor's mansion a few years ago. Partway through the bash, there was a roast of Cuomo's top aide, Melissa DeRosa. The roast entailed projecting photos of prominent state officials, then asking Melissa if she knew their names and her not knowing. We were saying to each other, this is weird, said one former staffer. And yeah, it is. Can you imagine that happening in any other workplace? A senior manager joking about not knowing anyone's name? Can you imagine if my team threw up a photo of our band leader and I didn't know his name? Ted Artisan Fred Armising. The most embarrassing thing I've ever done at a staff party is try to get everyone's attention for an inspirational speech by tapping a glass with a spoon, breaking the glass and cutting my finger, passing out when I saw the blood, and only waking up when Wally threw an entire bucket of water on me, which to this day seems like overkill. Would you agree in hindsight, Wally, that a bucket was too much water? Okay, great. Thank you, Wally. And there have even been public instances of Cuomo brushing off questions from journalists about the rampant culture of sexual harassment in Albany, like this heated exchange with reporters from 2017 in which he tried to turn the question back on them.
You did have it going on within your own administration, allegedly, with Sam Hoyt. What could you do differently to, you know, kind of pick up on that?
Well, look, you have it going on in journalism.
Yeah, I know.
What are you going to do differently?
But the question is about state government.
Yeah, it's about state government. I could tell you later in great detail about that if you're interested.
You. And journalism. And it's about you and journalism. And it's about state government. And it's about carpentry.
You can't just deflect questions about sexual harassment by listing off a bunch of random professions. It's about carpentry. It's about trucking. It's about scuba diving, flamenco dancing, beekeeping. You guys ever wonder? what they're wearing under those suits? Dozens of the most prominent Democrats in New York have called on Cuomo to resign. It's a stunning fall from grace. People familiar with the TV version of Andrew Cuomo are now meeting the real Andrew Cuomo. Who knows at this point if he'll even make it to the end of the week, given that...
Today's Monday.
This has been A Closer Look.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Our guest represents Maryland's 8th Congressional District and was the lead impeachment manager. Please welcome to the show, Congressman Jamie Raskin. Thanks for being here, Congressman.
I'm delighted to be with you, Seth. Thanks for having me.
So many were introduced to you as the lead impeachment manager. Many from both sides of the aisle said you did a great job and that the defense maybe didn't. Were you surprised by the preparation level of Donald Trump's legal team during the impeachment?
Well, let's see. We don't speak ill of fellow members of the bar, but when Mr. Castor finished that very long-winded opening, something ran through my mind that I'd heard in a science class when I was in college, a professor who quoted a physicist who read someone else's paper and said, that's not even wrong. I kind of felt like he had never even addressed the issues in the case or the facts of the case. And so it wasn't like he got up and struck out. He just never really found the stadium.
Now, the one argument that can be made for that approach is he was probably fairly confident that his client was not going to get impeached. You went into it maybe a little more confident than that. I have heard you say you thought you were going to win with a unanimous Senate vote, 100-0, voting to impeach. Voting to convict,
I thought that the evidence in the case was so overwhelming that a Senate that was doing its job of rendering impartial justice, which is the oath that they swore to uphold, could do nothing other than vote to convict. And as you say, he was already impeached by the House. So we had the strongest bipartisan majority in the House in American history for impeachment. And then it came to the Senate. And I thought that we would get to 100-0, that the bottom would just fall out on the president's defense. But there were obviously people who had decided at the beginning that they were going to vote to acquit him and hang their hat on this technical defense that he couldn't be tried even after leaving office, even though he was impeached for actions that he undertook while he was in office, which has been the traditional American approach going back to the very beginning of the Constitution.
Do you think that the results would have been different in the vote to convict had it been a blind vote where people would not have known how each senator made their choice?
Yes, and a lot of Republicans were saying that to me, that if they had made the decision to structure the rules of the Senate differently, if it had been a secret ballot, which is basically what you've got when a real jury meets. When jury meets, the public doesn't know who's voting in which direction. And so if they had decided to do the same thing, I think that would have made a difference. I also kicked myself, Seth, because I wish that I had moved at the beginning to do something they hadn't even considered, which was to keep them from sitting in partisan blocks. You know, they had the Republicans over on the right side and the Democrats over on the left side. They should have been seated alphabetically or something else, because it encouraged them to keep thinking of it in partisan terms. And the whole trick is to get them to render an impartial verdict. And that word impartial is a lot like nonpartisan.
Obviously, you know, we're watching via the cameras and you made a very riveting case. Did you feel as though you had the attention of the senators when you were making it?
We had the attention of every senator who was paying attention. And the reason I say that is because I looked out often and saw not a majority at all of the Republicans, but a handful of Republicans who were studiously refusing to look at the camera when we showed footage of the violent insurrection, the attacks on the police officers, the people chanting, hang Mike Pence, hang Mike Pence, traitor, traitor, traitor. They were essentially closing their eyes to it. And for that, I won't forgive any of those senators. I mean, it's one thing to get to the end and say, I wasn't persuaded by your case, or I think jurisdictionally, even though this is a radically novel argument, the president can't be tried once he's left office. But it's quite another to say, I'm not even going to look at the facts of the case. So those people I'm not going to forgive for a long time.
Obviously, they probably don't teach in law school how to make a case to a jury who are also witnesses to the crime. And one could even argue co-conspirators. How do you approach laying out a case to a room full of people who were there and saw it with their own eyes?
Well, you would have thought that that would make our job a lot easier, because it's like getting a jury full of people who were there when the crime was committed, and the crime was committed in the courtroom, because we were meeting in one of the places, you remember, that the insurrectionists stormed and took over. They had their feet up on all these people's desks. They were rifling their belongings. And if you've got any kind of professional or democratic self-respect at all, you would think you'd go in saying, you know, the president's going to pay for this if he's the one who got this thing started, which, of course, he did. So I was startled that that 43 of them were willing to just look the other way and say, no, this guy's got too much power in our party. And even though if you're with Mitch McConnell, we made an overwhelming case, we proved our case on the facts, still they were going to claim that the president could not be tried once he's left office, thereby creating what we were calling the January exception. You can get away with whatever you want once you hit January, a coup, a rebellion, an insurrection, lining up members of Congress, taking people hostage. I mean, it's an absurdity when you think about it. And I quoted, Voltaire, who said, anybody who can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities. And I think that captures pretty well the whole course of our history over the last few years. I mean, Donald Trump really was convincing people somehow he had won the election when he lost by more than 7 million votes. It was a landslide on his own terms in the Electoral College. And yet there's still people walking around like zombies in Congress today saying that Donald Trump won the election.
Obviously, to pick up something like being the impeachment manager, that requires a great deal of patriotism to take a job like this. This was a time, and we want to pass along our condolences. You tragically lost your son last year, and to take up this very difficult job that obviously required a lot of your time, focus, and energy. Was it important for you to channel that grief into something that mattered as much as this?
I think so. My son, Tommy, who was in his second year at Harvard Law School, was a great champion of the rule of law and the rule of law as an instrument of justice and democracy. And I felt him very much next to my heart and in my chest over the course of the trial. And for me, it was important. I just kept thinking, I'm not going to lose my son on the last day of 2020 and lose my country in 2021. We have got to establish that this is completely off-limits conduct and behavior. We can never allow anything like that to happen to us again, to have a president who basically incites a violent attack to overturn an election in order to install himself in office. And so I felt Tommy with me, as well as my daughters, Hannah and Tabitha and Sarah, my wife, my whole family, and all of my colleagues. And as you know, Seth, we had just a remarkable team of impeachment managers, and they will be my brothers and sisters forever after what we went through there.
Well, it's really, we thank you for what you put into the historical record, and thank you so much for making time for us today. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate your having me, Seth. Best to you.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
To be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, la, 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 where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.